pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special edition of Declarations of War. I am your host, Alexei Avkar, joined by co-hosts Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
And Levitane.
Good evening. Thank you for getting the name right.
Hey. We are joined today by a very special guest, former CSM representative and innocent man, Brisk Rubal.
Hey, Alec. Good to see you guys.
Well, Brisk, thanks for
coming.
Let's not
go too far. He's a new player, after all. He is innocent of the charges waged by CCP. Not waged. Levied? I don't know the term.
He didn't alleged. We'll go with
break
alleged.
The ADM. Yeah, he didn't break the NDA. That we know he is innocent of. Everything else, we can't say.
I
haven't been able to completely clear him of obstruction, but...
No collusion.
No collusion. Totally clears for Skrubal. Thank you very much. Very cool, very legal. Brisk, thank you very much. Everybody kind of had you on as a guest once you first got suspended. We were thinking about it. We also had the CSM Minutes episode like stacked right on top of that. We were able to get Commander A's for that, who had dropped out in response to the action taken against you. But I'm kind of glad that we waited till everything was resolved, because the resolution was fairly explosive. And I know you've been making a lot of the rounds, so I want to extend my thanks to you and your family for taking the time to come on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. I haven't been on in a while, and it was good to get back in touch with you guys.
Absolutely. Let's hop right in. So for anyone who's not been following the story, and you should have been listening to our last episode, Tisk Tisk audience, but Brisk was banned, basically permabanned, from EVE along with two other high-profile members of the initiative, and Brisk was removed from the CSM for allegedly violating the NDA. This was announced via a very public dev blog that got a lot of media traction. Brisk immediately came out and said, hey, this isn't right. This is never brought to my attention. I've never done anything wrong. Charges totally false. There was a lot of public pressure. CCP put out a blog saying, hey, we're going to go back and reevaluate this. And then very recently, it was just released that they are actually did a thorough investigation for some reason now rather than when this whole thing got kicked off. And that actually Brisk is correct. He is not in violation of the NDA, and the initial investigation, if there even was one, was not done correctly. And so they overturned the ban, and here we are. I guess let's kick things off with Brisk. The underlying incident itself, to what degree was there even any basis for this? Was this a misunderstanding that got out of hand, or was this totally out of left field? How far is the gap between fact and reality? CCP's blogs and reality, I should say.
Well, I think the issue is it depends on how who you give the benefit of the doubt to and how you shade things. I mean, when this first came down and we were notified we were banned, we had no information at all. All I had was you were, removed for and banned, permabanned for leaking NDA and material, and that two other players were leaked. And the reason is because one of those players used the information that you provided him to make illicit transactions in the game. So I had no idea at that point, what that was about, because I knew I hadn't done any, I had not breached the NDA, because I'm pretty, when I read the original NDA and I signed it, I knew what I was signing. I knew what the rules were. And I've tried to do my very best to protect CCP's proprietary information so it doesn't get out. So I was pretty sure that I had not done that knowingly. I think the issue was trying to figure out exactly what triggered the whole thing. And Pando, who was one of the other players that got banned, Dark Shines, who was one of the other players that got banned, we spent the first day or so just chatting with each other, trying to figure out what could have triggered this. And I asked them point blank, I said, did either of you guys do anything differently than you've done in the last, you know, 3 or 4 months than you've done before? And Shines said, well, I sold my Moloch. Now, Shines has had a Moloch for about a year. He loves the thing. It was one of his favorite ships. I mean, he would drop that thing on anything that came in a fountain, and he was pretty well known for it. And he had about 150 kill marks on the thing. But he had started trying to sell this back in January, way before the summit, and he was doing it because he was trying to set up a Titan fund for his alliance to help some of our guys get into Titans. And he said, well, I can't justify, you know, having a faction Titan when I could take that money and free it up and try to get more players into Titans, because that's what we need in terms of numbers for in it. So that was the only thing we could think of that could possibly have been it. And then we just assumed that, all right, if they think that I leaked something in regards to changes that might make the Moloch less useful or more expensive or whatever, then that could be what triggered this. So we went off of that assumption. And I mean, it turns out, based on what Shines has told me, that was the incident that triggered the whole thing. And then the link between me and Pando was that everybody on the CSM, everybody in general, at least in it and everything, knows that Pando and I are very close and we talk a lot. And throughout the entire process of being on the CSM, I have been doing my best to communicate with players to get their ideas, to ask them for ideas, and to take their ideas and present them to CCP. And I did that with Pando as well. So in those situations, everybody was aware that I talked to him. And everybody, you know, was aware that Pando and Shines are very close. They're our top two strategic FCs. And I think it just turned into a situation where Briss talks to Pando. Pando talks to Dark Shines. Dark Shines sells a Moloch. The timing looks suspicious. So we'll take 2 plus 2. And they got 5. And that was what happened. That's what we think happened. So, unfortunately, I mean, the reality was all of this was not true. There was no NDA leaks. The Moloch was not sold because of an NDA leak. It wasn't. If you think about it, the nerfs that came out later really didn't have an impact on Molochs anyway. So it's not like Shines made any money off of the sale more than he would have if he had sold it in January. So the whole thing ended up being just kind of a mistake. And I was happy that CCP recognized early that they had made that mistake and were willing to do the right thing and fix it.
In one of the initial blogs by CCP about this incident, they included some recommended changes to how the CSM operates, specifically the banning of phones and electronic devices at use in/during CSM summit meetings. Could you provide any context as to why that element was brought into that blog, or speculate as to why that element was brought into the blog?
The only thing that I can think is that there was some belief that I had leaked the material that they claimed that I had leaked, whatever it was supposed to be, because I still don't know what it was that I was supposed to have told Pando that got to Shines, that I had done that somehow during the summit. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. The reality is, and I think, frankly, that's, I thought that was a very odd thing to add into the dev blog. I wasn't the only one at the table that had a computer. All of us had our phones. And I think it's a long day. It's 8 hours a day, and I couldn't take that much time off work without being in communication with my office. And I took a number of work calls during the summit. My guys expect me to be there no matter what, regardless of where I am. Even if I'm not in the country, if my boss wants to call me, he wants to call me. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, 7 a.m. or 2 a.m. or whatever. So I can't be out of communication range. So I had to have my computers and stuff. And anybody that was sitting on our side of the table could see what I was doing. It wasn't, you know, my screen wasn't hidden. So if somebody saw me typing a message to somebody, some player, they could easily put 2 and 2 together and say, hey, maybe he's leaking. Obviously, that didn't happen. But that's the only thing I can think of that makes sense with all that in that blog.
Artemis?
So you mentioned specifically like communication with your boss throughout this, and it has been a major point of discussion since the initial dev blog came out, let alone the follow-up and the quote-unquote final statement on the Brisk situation, is that how this has impacted your real-life situation. Because for listeners who are unfamiliar, a significant part of your campaign was the ties between your real-life occupation and how that translated in terms of usable skills to you being a quality member of the CSM. And I think definitely, in my opinion, the highlight of your campaign was your campaign video, which does, in my opinion, the best job at showcasing this connection between your real-life occupation and your abilities as a CSM member. So can you walk us through how has this affected your real life because of that connection?
Well, I'm hoping that because we fix this, that there won't be a huge impact. But there's still going to be an impact. The bottom line is, when I ran, I'm just another line member. I've never been anything special in EVE other than a player. I played for a long time, which gives me a leg up on a lot of people that haven't played as long. I started playing in 2006. But I'm not an FC. I'm not an alliance leader. I'm not a CEO. I'm not, some big Diplo guy or a famous streamer or anything. So my real shtick when I was running for CSM was I'm the real politician. And I had to put my information out there, because if I hadn't, I couldn't just say that and then have everybody say, well, no, you're not really a politician. I would have to, then be like, well, I have to prove it. So here's my stuff. And I knew even if I hadn't, as soon as I did a commercial, it would take 5 seconds for people to do a Google image search on my face and find out who I was. So rather than, than pretend that I'm not who I am, I put it out there. But the problem is, in that regard, when something like this happens and I'm accused of something, it has a disproportionate impact on me. First, you guys know I'm a licensed attorney in Virginia. We have rules of professional responsibility. And one of the things that we are specifically prohibited from doing, it's Rule 8.3, is engaging in any behavior that could call into question our honesty or trustworthiness as an attorney. So getting accused of violating an NDA, which is a legal document that I signed, that is basically about not going behind somebody's back and telling stuff you're not supposed to say. Confidentiality is a big deal for attorneys. That put my license in jeopardy, in my opinion, made me worried about that. In addition, I intend to probably run for a real office again someday. That's the goal. I'm kind of waiting trying to get some more, experience. But the fact is, anytime I run in the future, I expect that I will see attack ads from my opponent saying, this guy wasn't even straight in a video game. How can we trust him in elected office? Even if they know that I was exonerated, just because the headlines and the negative stories are still going to be out there on the internet, because nothing ever goes away on the internet. So I know I'm going to hear this again, and it didn't help. The press was everywhere. Within about 15 minutes of the blog coming out, we had PC Gamer did a story, Kotaku did a story, and then that jumped to all of the other gaming websites that all crib their stuff off of that. And then it jumped into the real media. I had, there was a Variety article that came out, Cracked had an article that came out, and it became like a thing. I had Washington Post was calling me like 3 times a day for 2 days in a row. I know a lot of Post reporters. It wasn't anybody that I knew, but I know a lot of them. So, getting my contact info was not hard. Somebody saying that they were a Fox News reporter called my office and asked them to comment. So it was like, after a couple of days, it's like, all right, everybody is telling me and saying, hey, Brian, what's going on? Why are you doing this? What's going on? Did you really break this? Did you really do this? What's this all about? And after a while, it's like, yeah, it was difficult. And I was fully expecting that if I couldn't get this fixed, that this would have a long term, pretty detrimental impact on my reputation. And I would hate to have to explain this anytime I go for a job in the future, anytime I run for office in the future, anytime I try to get security clearance, my security clearance back, any of that kind of stuff. It would be something I'd have to deal with. So it was pretty devastating when it happened.
These various media outlets you named, obviously it's not something you really have control over, but to what degree do you think they kind of owe those stories to be updated, changed, or replaced, given that your name has been cleared?
Well, I think the responsible ones and the ones that are good are going to go ahead and write follow-up stories that explain that, hey, we've reported this before, but the company's come back and said he didn't do it and that they were wrong and they apologized. PC Gamer was one of the first that came out with a story saying that I did it, and they splashed my face and put my name in there. I think they put it in there 16 times or something. But in their defense, they were also the first group that came out with a story saying that CCP admitted they were wrong and they made a mistake and that they were apologizing to us and unbanning me. So I give them credit for doing the right thing. There are other outlets that did not. GeekTalk.com, for instance, wrote a really nasty, very partisan piece about me being a Republican and everything. And they never wrote a follow-up article. I actually took the guy that wrote the article to task on Twitter because all they did was add a sentence to the beginning of the original story saying, in the interest of fairness, we want to let you know that the company says he didn't do it, but then left all of the nasty stuff that they had written up and left the headline unchanged. You know,
that's bullshit.
Like, come on. Exactly. It's like, come on, guys. You know, you're gonna sully my reputation when you think I did something wrong. At the very least, give me the fair shake and just say, hey, the company exonerated him. He didn't do it. You know, and I think that's what the line that separates the responsible outlets from the ones that are just clickbait.
I do want to just have one point of clarification, and this was something that a lot of people were wondering about, even on Talking in Stations. We had a reporter from Kotaku on to discuss, like, how did they find out about this story? And in CCP's defense, when they did release the final statement, they did reach out to every single publication they could find that had published a story saying that you had reporting on the initial ban and the initial removal from the CSM, and said, hey, listen, we, CCP, messed up here. Brisk is actually innocent. So I do just want to get that message out there for all the people who missed it, because it wasn't stated in the dev blog. It was a CSM employee who said it on the Reddit thread, ironically enough, that yes, CCP did go out and explicitly reach out to every single news outlet they could find to correct the story.
And I appreciated that. CCP Grendel was the head PR guy, and he mentioned that in the Reddit thread. And he and I have been I worked with him quite a bit. He's the head of the PR group, and we put out a joint statement, CCP and me, to all the outlets that had covered the story, just making it clear that, you know, this was a mistake. I've been exonerated. They've apologized. I've accepted the apology. We consider the matter closed. We're not making any more official statements, that type of stuff. So I think they did the right thing, and I appreciated that. And it was very helpful that they were willing to go out and do that and to make such a public apology and a public acknowledgement of the mistake was a big deal. And I don't think every company would do that. So I give CCP a lot of credit for what they did.
Well, speaking of CCP, Lave, I know there's a question you're dying to ask.
Pick me. I think it's fair to say that CCP haven't covered themselves in glory on this particular incident. In terms of, we're getting towards the end of the current CSM term, and it soon will be time, if so, one so runs, for the next CSM. Do you think that what has transpired through this will affect how future CSMs kind of run, or what status will they employ? Do you think it will change any of their role, or hinder, or maybe even empower a subsequent CSM force as a council in terms of a check or balance to CCP?
You know, I hope it doesn't result in a lot of changes. And I'll tell you, you know, I thought that we had a very good relationship with CCP, the CSM. I thought that a lot of the issues that people had in the past, and a lot of the friction that had existed in the past between the CSM and CCP, I thought we did a really good job of fixing that, and we made a lot of progress. And that one of the most unfortunate things about this whole thing for me was that I hoped that it did not sour the company on the CSM, and I hope that it didn't sour the CSM on the company. And I think the CSM has a very valuable role that it plays with CCP, having 10 players who care enough about the game to put that kind of time into it, to build relationships with the staff, to give them, you know, people that they can go talk to that play the game every day, I think is very important. And I would hate to see that change. That being said, I think the one thing that they did say in the dev blog was that they were going to review their policies and procedures and make changes. And I think I agree with that 100%. I think that's very useful. And I think that that's something that needs to get done. But I mean, in the end, you know, a lot of people have said, Briss, why aren't you angry? Why aren't you yelling? Why aren't you threatening to sue them? Why aren't you doing this and that and the other thing? And the reality for me was, I don't hate this company. Even after everything that happened, I don't hate the company. I don't hate the people. I've spent a long, they created my favorite video game of all time. These are the people that have made it possible for me to make friendship with guys like you, and a lot of the folks that are across New Eden and my corp mates and things like that. So I don't hate them, and I recognize people make mistakes. But and the biggest and most important thing is when folks make mistakes, to own it, to come up and say, you know what, I screwed up. I'm sorry. I'm going to do better next time. And if somebody does that to me, I'm gonna accept the apology, and I'm gonna take them at their word. Because that's just the kind of guy that I am. So I hope that, you know, this moving forward, this never happens to anybody else. And I hate that it had to happen to me. But at the same time, I'd rather that it happened to me knowing that I can take it, because I've been in this before in real life, in situations like this, having had, you know, people coming at you in politics. It's something that you learn pretty quickly, or else you get out of it real fast. So I'm used to it. And I just hope that in the future that you know, whatever changes are made, make it possible something like this doesn't happen again. But I give CCP all the credit in the world. They did, the way that they handled the resolution of this was very well done, and I'm happy that they did it. And I got no complaints.
Well, that's encouraging to hear. Like investigating players for or not players, but I guess people generally for wrongdoing related to gaming on the internet has kind of been my world for the past 4+ years. To see something go this wrong is kind of shocking. I mean, we can only, I guess, speculate the reasons things progressed as they did, but yeah. It seems like they went all in on that initial post, and I was thinking to myself, and I think I mentioned in the last show, you wouldn't take those steps unless you felt really confident, but it may be that their policies and processes around this had some significant gaps, and this kind of incident was needed to get some maturity there. It's definitely surprising to see. I did have a follow-up question on how it impacts the CSM. Shout out to our buddy Sandor, another Noir veteran, one of my favorite people that I've met in EVE to discuss politics with, present company excluded, Risk. And he said this could be the death knell of the CSM, you know, because the CSM was named as the party that had brought these concerns to CCP in the first place, and that it, you know, was a fatal blow to the perception of the CSM, not necessarily within CCP, but within the player base. And I was wondering if you had any comment on how you felt that this incident in general, either the initial cause of it, your role in it initially as a as like the perpetrator and now as the victim and CCP's resolution, to what extent, if any, do you feel like this reflects on the CSM as an institution going forward?
I don't think it should. And I mean, the reality is, if any member of the CSM was approached by somebody or had information that they thought another member of the CSM was breaking the rules, I mean, we're obligated to report that. So if somebody thought that I was breaking the rules, I mean, granted, I would like to think that my colleagues would know me better after having spent a year with me, to think that I would never leak NDA material for personal benefit or for the benefit of some alliance mate. I mean, you know, that's just not in my nature. And making some ISK in EVE, if I want to make ISK in EVE and I don't have time to go mine or rat, I'll pull out my credit card. It's not like I haven't done it before. You know, I buy Plex a lot, so I didn't need the money, and I don't think any of my guys needed the money. And if they needed the money bad enough, I would have given it to them. They didn't have to, nobody would ever have to rely on NDA leaks to make money off of me. So the whole concept of there, I found incredulous. But at the same time, you know, if somebody thinks I did something wrong, then they're obligated to go and report it. And I think everybody would hope in that situation that the investigation would be done in such a way that there would be no false positives. But you know what? This is real life. you know, we're dealing with human beings. People make mistakes. There are hundreds and thousands of innocent people who are sitting in jails right now. I mean, every law school in the country has an innocence project that goes out and tries to exonerate people that have been falsely accused that are sitting in prison. You know, and every couple of years you get a good case where a death row inmate is exonerated by DNA evidence that came out 20 years later. So we all know that people make mistakes. So I don't hold any ill will against any of the other CSM members. I don't think they did anything wrong. I think in the end of the day, this was an honest mistake. And I know some people have said, well, was this a metagame? Was it possible? I'm not sure it's possible. I would just be very surprised if that was what it is. And I'm just going to err on the side that this was all, you know, honest mistakes made by honest people and go from there.
Clay?
Yeah, so I suppose coming to the end of this now is, obviously, in this particular instance, in this term, you've stepped down from the current CSM. Do you feel that, I suppose the first question would be, would you ever consider going again for this kind of office? And I appreciate, you know, your answer now might not necessarily be the answer in the future of everything that happened. But then what would you advise anyone else who was thinking maybe as a first time or as a maybe unsuccessful before and even had been successful before? What would your advice be to someone who wanted to run for this with the hindsight knowledge of everything that's gone on so far?
And even built into that, Briss, could you also comment on why you resigned in the first place? Because name cleared, you would have been entitled to your spot back, I imagine.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. We've got about a month left in the term. I think I came on board like in June, middle of June. The election started in May. I remember, I think I dropped my commercial in the middle of May. So we're pretty much done. And both of the summits are over. I don't expect there to be a whole heck of a lot of action for the next couple of months. So I felt like I finished my term. But at the same time, it's like, you know what? This was very difficult. I put my family and my wife through a lot the last 2 weeks while we were all trying to get this resolved. And I felt like it would not be a good idea to just jump back in and pretend nothing happened. So I said, and I had decided, you know, regardless of whether I got exonerated or not, I wasn't going to run again for CSM 14 and I was going to resign. So when we were wrapping up everything and they said, well, you know, you can run again if you want. I said, okay, well, you know, I'll take that under advisement, but I'm not planning on anything. So I think, you know, so that was my philosophy about that. But I wanted to make it clear, and that's one of the reasons why the joint statement CCP and I put out said that I could run again if I wanted to, because I knew that if that wasn't in there, if there was any question about it, that everybody just say, oh, well, something really did happen, but he had to resign. So, you know, he really did it. They just backed off. And that wasn't the case. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, it was my decision to resign. It was my decision not to run for CSM 14. And if I run in the future, it'll be my decision too. I don't know. You know, some of the guys have said you should run again. My wife doesn't want me to run again. So, I mean, we'll see. It's a long time. A year's a long time. I'll think about it. But I feel like I got a lot accomplished regardless of this whole nonsense at the end. And I don't know if I really want to keep doing it, but we'll see. You know, and I'm never going to say never, because you never say never in politics. But right now, I think I've had my fill of it.
I see a follow-up on Lave's question as it's written that I'm very curious about, which is sort of the future role of the CSM now that you're out of it and have been in it for quite a while. That's the other one. Sorry. What advice do you give to anyone that's like planning on running or thinking about it, but maybe is reconsidering after this incident?
Well, I don't want to discourage anybody from running if they want to. I think, you know, if you're interested and you want to do this, then do it. I think my scenario was unique, just because of who I am and how I ran my campaign. I don't think it's likely that something like this will happen again. I understand. I mean, I saw Commander Hayes decided not to run again because what happened to me, and that That makes perfect sense to me because he's had the same issue. I mean, he's had similar issues. Like he tries to help out Eve, the guys at CCP during Eve Vegas when they had trouble with customs, you know, and within like an hour of them of the news story saying, hey, the player helps out because he knows somebody at Homeland Security. He's got to go through all kinds of investigations at work. So it's not fun when your real life job gets sucked into this stuff. But I wouldn't want that to deter anybody from running. But I mean, anytime you put yourself in the public eye like this, you have to know what you're getting into and know that you're going to become a target. Even somebody like me, I thought I was a pretty good dude. I didn't think I was that much of a jerk, but there are still people out there that think I'm an arrogant asshole who's horrible and does bad things and was completely unqualified and shouldn't be a CSM member. And they hate me. All of that because, you know, we blew up their Keepstar or, you know, they think I'm trolling them when I talk about wormholes or stuff like that. It's the nature of the beast when you get in the public eye. So if you're not ready for that, then I wouldn't run. At the same time, you know, I don't want to discourage anybody from doing it. I had a fun experience up until this point.
Yeah, well, I'll say this about your CSM run, Risk. You have the best campaign commercial of all time, and it's going to be hard to imagine that title being taken away from you. I think you had a lot to prove in some ways. People thought your candidacy was novel, but, you know, is this guy just, he's a politician, what does that mean for Eve? What does that mean for how he's going to conduct himself? And the interaction with you that stands out the most for me was at Eve Vegas. I've heard it was the last one we were at or the one before that. I'm pretty sure it was the last one. Where the CSM roundtable kicked off. It was pretty early in the morning, I think. You were the only person to show up on the CSM. There were multiple CSM members in attendance. You were there. Just you. And you sat there for an hour by yourself and not only fielded questions from the room of people, but did so without, to my knowledge, even once maligning any of the other CSMs for not being there, despite what I'm sure is a very strong temptation to do that. So to me, that showed a lot about your character and your commitment to the game and the degree to which you took your responsibilities as a CSM very seriously. So I'm really, really happy that there was nothing to this allegation and that you're totally free and clear. And I sincerely hope this is something that doesn't come to impact your real life in any way, because you deserve the good things, not the bad things.
And I appreciate that, Alec. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's it for Brisk. My understanding is he has a very anxious wife he needs to run off to before he gets yelled at.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I very much appreciate it.
Thanks. Cheers, mate. Talk to you soon. What a guy. What a weird-ass situation, all in all. Holy shit. And I'm glad we were able to get him as a follow-up to the last episode, because 2 weeks ago, this was all dropping, and things were looking real bad. And then they were like, oh, CCP's not sure anymore. That's interesting. And now here we are, 1 week later. Speaking of CCP stuff, our other story that we want to talk about, CCP Ghost going on Destiny's podcast. I thought that was pretty interesting. Now, I haven't listened to the whole thing, but for those who are not aware, CCP Ghost is a strategist for CCP, a senior strategist. And apparently his background is amazing, like CIA-level stuff. He's like into spying and game theory and all this kind of stuff.
And now I want to go listen to the podcast.
I know. Destiny, and I guess we should assume that people aren't familiar with Destiny either. Destiny is a major streamer on Twitch. He's well known for having these debates on his podcast, where he'll bring on famous or controversial people. He'll bring on personalities from within the Twitch community. This particular podcast also featured TriHex, who is the namesake of the Try Hard emote on Twitch, as very popular speedrunner. And Destiny and Triheart, or Team Tri-X, had Ghost on to talk about Eve, and talked a little bit about himself. I'm up to the point where they started discussing the impact of the subprime mortgage crisis on Iceland, which is an interesting thing to weave in, but really cool and fascinating. And they apparently get into quite a bit about EVE Online, including the gambling prohibition, including new players and what the learning curve is like now. Apparently, Destiny tried EVE at one point, Artemis. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, so, I mean, unless the minutes were referring to a different Destiny, it's explicitly mentioned in the most recent CSM minutes that Destiny tried EVE, played it for a few months, then eventually quit because he is a prominent streamer and so was the target for quite a bit of, I'd say, harassment, but that has a negative connotation outside of EVE. So, he got griefed in the way that players who are prominent in EVE get griefed and didn't want to deal with that. And so he stopped playing. So when I first heard about this interview, I thought, oh, it's just going to be Destiny arguing with CCP Ghost about the situation with the toxic community and whatnot. But it sounds like it's actually a super interesting conversation worth listening to.
I definitely am. It's on my little queue. And I just thought it was noteworthy because Destiny has quite a big reach, and Trihex is a major figure in the Twitch streaming community. And it's always a little exciting to see guys of that stature, trying EVE is one thing, talking about it, putting it on their podcasts. That's pretty unique exposure that EVE doesn't usually get. So I thought it was really cool and wanted to call that out, provide a link in our show so you guys can go check out Destiny's podcast once you're done with this one.
I think this marks a definite change in strategy, or at least an increase in effort being put into by CCP to reach out more from CCP itself in terms of marketing and advertising in this sort of manner. We saw the AMA with Hilmar. He's done a number of interviews. They had the tech demo with the Hadeon guys for EVE Aether, I think is what it was called. I can't even remember. Mm-hmm. And from seeing various people who are actively working with CCP, talking to them on things surrounding EVE media itself, it definitely looks like EVE, CCP, and the community team are really pushing hard to get better at reaching out with the media and getting EVE out there, which there's actually a story that's been going around and a bunch of old bitter vets hemming and hawing about. It was a quote from an article where CCP Hilmar was interviewed, and he said something to the effect of, there are 10,000 new players a month who come into EVE. And there's some speculation on whether that's new accounts, whether they're actually new people trying the game or just new alphas, what have you. But in any case, there's a bunch of new blood entering the game, but then they leave very quickly. And so there's a discussion of, well, is that just the nature of EVE? Because EVE is not a casual game. EVE is a hardcore game for hardcore gamers. It's a cold, dark, harsh universe, and so it will turn people away. And then there's also the question, is it the learning curve, which we've been actively trying to smoothen out and make easier, especially with a lot of the revamps to the new player experience? And it brings the question to my mind, if CCP is now putting in all of this effort to marketing that they haven't done in the past, are they confident in the changes they've done to the new player experience to feel that they can, if they bring in new players now, those new players will stick?
That's the million-dollar question.
Effort. And then there's also just a thought in my mind, which is the thing was also mentioned, the veteran players are leaving EVE. The active player count has been going down for years. You can see this on... You can't see the active account numbers because CCP doesn't share those, but you can see the number of active players logged into space at any given point in time. And that has been going down steadily for years. And so the question is, if your game is both unable to entice new players to stay and is forcing old players away, what is going wrong?
Everything, apparently.
Yeah. And it was an interesting moment that I had when I saw both of those, because both of those comments appeared in very similar time spans in the Talking and Stations Discord. And I'm like, here I am, super positive and optimistic about the future of Eve with the stuff coming out of the CSM minutes, some of it at least, with the changes CCP has been making, with the efforts they've been making with reaching out to Eve Media and things like that. I am super optimistic about this game. And yet, if you actually look at it, the player base is going away and we can't seem to make any new players stick. So I feel like I shouldn't be as optimistic as I am.
Lave, you're a bitter vet. Why don't you weigh in here?
Well, CCP, after everything we just heard about CCP messing up with Brist, they kind of need some good publicity, right?
That couldn't hurt.
I mean, certainly, I think you're certainly starting to see a bit of a shift certainly in the game, and I do agree that a lot of people are moving out of the game itself. And that's simply because, first of all, look at the marketplace. I mean, you've got quite a few fairly decent free-to-play games that are now out there that allow people to jump in and out of them very quickly. Apex, Fortnite, to name but a few. And then you also have to consider that a lot of the bitter vets are also getting older in real life and therefore are usually kind of having more set jobs. They have families. They have other responsibilities. They don't have the time to, you know, shoot spodgemon for 5-6 hours a day. They rather want content in more shorter, kind of sharper bites. And Eve has always been that kind of game that rewards the patient build-up, the kind of the you need more players to do this. And so I think at that point, you're now seeing players kind of deserting the middle ground of low security and all kind of amalgamating into giant kind of blobs around the donut. It's what happened in Serenity.
Speaking of Serenity, ironically, some of those players are leaving Serenity and coming here. You got more PIBC, which was the dominant Chinese alliance. They are now hitting Tranquility in some numbers, I understand.
Yeah, they're under a new alliance name because Skill Yourself's Rental Alliance took their alliance name.
That's so wrong.
They're like the Army of Mangoes or something like that. It's a reference to there was an insult levied at them on the Chinese server, and that insult then molded into a rallying cry that they called themselves Mangoes. If you're interested in the nuance of that particular story, go check out the Rooks and Kings video on it, on Serenity in particular. It's a good watch anyway, even if you're not curious about that particular story. But the Army of the Mangoes or something like that, I think last I saw they had a big old like Thrasher brawl with them and Test. It was like 200 Thrashers or something like that, just brawling it out in low sec. I need to try and find this battle report.
I mean, they have the numbers, they have the organization, they're basically like the Imperium, or like, well, I guess Cross-Gen Imperium and PL of the Chinese server. So if they get all their dudes over here and they start getting some skill points, that could be very interesting. The word in the street is they've got their eyes on beating up Fraternity.
It's interesting that is the word on the street, because if sources can be trusted, in the ping which was sent out announcing their move to Tranquility, they explicitly said, listen, stuff that happened on Serenity stays on Serenity. That's in the past. Tranquility is our present and future. So we're cutting all ties, we're resetting standings, and we're burying the hatchet, if you will. So them going after Fraternity and making allegiances with existing Tranquility powers in order to accomplish that goal seems rather contradictory to their own statements. But then again, it's a matter of just who do you trust?
Mind games.
And tactically, it's probably the smarter option here as well. I mean, you have to consider that if they can't exactly try and just roll into Delve, that's going to go pretty much one way. And similarly, if you try and go up into Tribute area against 10, basically, between kind of the Imperium powerhouse, which stretches essentially from the west of the map down to the southeast of the map, and then you've got everything north of the west of that kind of around the other side, which is essentially PamFam, the northern kind of side of things. There's a small sliver towards the east, which is still relatively kind of a border zone slash some smaller entities there. So if you did want to carve out some space, that's probably the area you'd kind of attack or go near first without getting absolutely steamrolled.
If I were them, and they have to have some sort of inside track with the politics of Tranquility, right? They have to know what has been going on TQ, or at least have access to somebody who could tell them. If I were them, I'd go kick HK out of Cobalt Edge and move in there. Because what you need in order to become a fighting force is you need experience fighting in a TQ environment against TQ pilots and with TQ fleet doctrines, and you need skill points. And all of that could be accomplished by fighting for and taking over an ULSAC region and then crabbing to your heart's content. It's exactly what Fraternity did, successfully did, depending on who you ask, given how they're performing in their current conflict with Legacy Co. So I think that if I were an advisor to the new Mango army, I'd say go kick HK out of Cobalt Edge. And if you feel like that's too far, like the logistics lines would be too stretched out for such a new alliance, and if they explicitly like wanted to stay neutral, you could even do like what Triumvirate did and pop into freaking Pureblind or hop into maybe Ethereum Reach. Jump into an area where there is active conflict and battle lines are not as well fortified as they are in Delve or in Tribute, for example, but into an active area of conflict and stake your claim there.
I like that second option a little better because it gets you more of the fighting experience just by themselves with the skill point level they're at now. I don't know if they could actually take on Hard Knox. I don't know if they could keep space they took against it being challenged. I think they need an intermediary step, which is them just building up experience, getting their members to move over. But while that process is happening, still giving the people that have moved some content and some experience against the meta that's over here and against the different factions that are over here. So I would go somewhere where a lot of factions are. I'd start some shit or join in on some shit that has already started and focus more on the fight rather than acquiring space quite yet. And then once they're ready, they've got a little more skill points. Most of their pilots have moved over and have, like, gotten all their stuff moved, and they're, like, fully stocked, got their supply chain set up, then take a look at what's out there.
We've mentioned skill points a lot in this discussion, and it's worth noting that, like, right now, large skill injectors are over a billion Escondida. There are a lot of people saying that this is explicitly because PIBC are buying them all. I'm more of the opinion it is speculation on people expecting PIBC to be wanting to buy them, and so they're hoarding them. But if you're a skill point farmer right now, you're extremely happy. And if you're anybody else, you're extremely unhappy. Which I feel like was a sentiment explained or expressed in the CSM minutes back in January. It's just gotten worse.
We had a poll in the previous episode about Artemis's corp management rant. 57% of the audience agrees with me that you are insane.
However, a combined total of, 45%. There's a rounding error in there somewhere.
Yeah.
A combined total of
43%. 43%.
Yes, 43%. That's the issue. Agree that I am either reasonable or correct. And for the record, I did not vote in this poll. None of these votes are mine. So other people who are not me, 43% of our listener base, agree that I am either reasonable or that I'm right. Nobody thinks that I'm wrong. They either think I'm reasonable or right, or that I'm insane. So my interpretation of this result is, anybody who has a couple of brain cells to rub together understands the logic in my argument and says either, yeah, that's reasonable, but I think you're taking your conclusion a bit too far, or straight up, yeah, you're right. Or they don't understand the argument, so they are wrong, and therefore they think I'm insane. That's how I'm interpreting this girl. I think that's a fair interpretation.
It's not me. It's the children who are wrong. Okay, Artemis. Okay. For the record, one person agrees with you, but okay.
Half the children think I'm reasonable or right. So
I think half the children are probably just fans of you on the show.
I mean, I can't blame them for that.
Vopergating from the Talking In Stations fan base. Okay. Let's move on to some host highlights. If you haven't heard, by the way, Artemis's rant about corporation management and how having it not be so bad and awful and a shitty UI and not having tools to give your members a sense of identity drastically impacts and forces out solo players from the player base, then by all means, go check out the last episode. You'll know it when you hear it.
If you're interested in a not completely biased and unrepresentative hatchet job of a summary of my argument, then go check out that episode.
Do you want to characterize your argument in your own words? Because that's what I heard. I think that's what over half the audience heard.
In my own words, on the last episode. So you can go and check it out there.
Host highlights. I had a double R64 moon. That is the jackpot moon. It was quite nice. It's probably the best way at the moment for me to spend my time making money since Artemis left, and I don't have the people to do triple abyssal site runs anymore. Anytime you want to come back, Artemis, I'm there for you, buddy. But the 6-4s are pretty nice. It's pretty good isk per hour. It's pretty quiet. But that double, man. Ooh. It's just so good. It happens pretty rarely. When it does, like, I'm strapped in. I'm not the hugest fan of mining, but I am a big fan of not being poor. So I'm good to go for an extended session.
It is. So for the people who actually fly with Alec in-game, it is known that he is like the most space poor bitter vet ever. He is just habitually broke.
It's because I spend all my time killing people. Or used to, anyway. A lot of people like PVEing. I don't. A lot of people have entire other accounts to PVE. I don't. And I pay for that decision.
Your lack of multi-boxing is the issue here. Like, you are perfectly capable and competent. You would be able to triple box these abyssal sites on your own without having to rely on other people. I think it is your social nature and your reliance on others that is letting you down here. Other people are bad for you. Rely on yourself. Make new accounts. Make the ISK.
Many years of anime have taught me that's not true, though.
I don't know what anime you have been watching, but the anime I have been watching says that other people are absolutely horrendous and completely incompetent.
You can't just rely on your own strength, man. But no, I could double, probably, but I don't even have the screen space to triple. And I don't want to feel like using those weird programs.
Evo Preview is not a weird program, and you could even alt-tab it. Like, the majority of the time I was triple-boxing the Abyssal sites, I was alt-tabbing, and I only had them up on a single monitor. Because you're basically just doing every single action three times. I'm telling you, it's super easy. Like, I tell you what, when the new patch hits, when we get the new Tech 2 Triglavian stuff, I'll run some more Abyssal stuff for you, and I'll show you how to do it. Like, I'll teach you the anchoring, and I'll teach you the broadcasting. That way you can do it on your own, and then you need to dig, we'll grind up enough ISK for you to get some new accounts rolling. We'll make this happen.
It doesn't feel right.
Self-reliant.
I don't know why. It doesn't feel right. Like, I know it's so socially acceptable to do an Eve, but I just feel weird. I can't explain it. It's totally irrational.
Self-reliant.
But I'd be even more self-reliant if I used multiple accounts. It just feels like a cheat somehow.
That's the whole point of Eve, dude. Everyone's cheating. You just have to be better at it.
But I like being better at them. I like being better than them without the cheating.
But clearly you're not. Clearly your plan is not working.
I've got a Fortisar anchored in 9 UI that says you're wrong.
Right, and that Fortizar is making you how much ISK?
A fair bit.
And yet you are still the most broke bitter bet ever.
Well, it's making the corporation a fair bit.
See, that's your problem. If you rely on other people, you have to compensate other people. If you rely on yourself, the only person you pay is yourself.
That is true.
Anyway, I think we've gone way too far with this. Alec is clearly wrong. I am clearly right once again, as is the tradition on this podcast.
I'm not even going to dispute it, Artemis. You're absolutely correct. It's my own psychological hang-ups. Anyway, Lave, highlight.
My highlight for this time was my first go in the ZAZ, the ZAZ-MAZ, which is the Tech 2 Triglavian logistics ship. Interesting. I mean, I won't class myself as a career logistics pilot, but like any self-respecting PvP, logistics 5 all the way. And it's a little bit, it was an interesting ship. I mean, these things are surprisingly fast, for a ship of the size, for a ship of their class. If people don't know anything about these ships, they adopt the same principle as the Triglavian ships in terms of DPS, it's like reps. So their rep, they have only one repper. So this is different from, say, a Guardian, which might have 4 armor and 2 cap transfers. The reps start low, but increase as you keep kind of maintain rep on a target. So generally speaking, they start lower than a Guardian, but at full strength, they are much more powerful than the rep output of a Guardian. In terms of their repping power, a good Guardian reps nearly 300 armor a second, and the ZAZ can go up to about 420 per second, and that's without links. So they can be very powerful.
And, like, their speed is nuts, and their tank is nuts, and their cap is nuts, and they're just generally better than every other ship, just like all the other trig ones.
With the exception of the Vedmak, which is quite balanced right now. Yeah, the other thing to consider here is that, obviously, it has no fall-off to these reppers, but the repper is 71 kilometers, which, again, is a good 10-plus kilometer range advantage on the other ships.
So, I mean, rather than speak on numbers, could you talk about the feel of it compared to, say, Mononeros? Or I guess Guardian, depending what you think is the closer equivalent. It does have more mids, so I would think it feels more like the Aneros, but, you know, is it qualitatively better?
It's a bit more difficult on the cap, because you can't mount, like, it doesn't have anywhere near the spare cap capacity if you're using remote cam transfer. In terms, it can do local boosting, but quite a good fit is to dual prop these things so that they can kind of afterburn out of danger if they're scrammed, while having double sensor booster and basically being impossible to kind of jam if they need to. The high slots, they have a bit of utility, so they can have some cap transfers if need be, but their range is limited, so a tight formation is usually very key if you want to maintain a ZAZ to ZAZ chain, unless you have battery guardians in there. These are guardians that have full cap fits.
You think it's worth? Would you recommend, for its current ISK price, other logistics pilots that might be listening to the show to try it out?
I'd certainly give it a try, even if you just tried the Rediva, which is the Tech 1 version. These kind of ships are great in protracted engagement when you can get enough reps on a target to start kind of needing the I suppose, where the extra repping power comes into handy. So this is going to, they work great in battleship fleets when there's not huge amounts of alpha, when it's more of a grind contest, or if you can mitigate damage down and therefore lower the risk of you being alphaed. If you're against a massive Munin fleet, for example, probably not going to make much of a difference, since the target's probably going to be dead before your reps land.
Are you using this with any pirate implants right now?
Not at this time, but I mean, in terms of the best implants, slaves or armor implants are the usual best one, because this ship can put down a surprising amount of effective hit points in terms of its native tank.
When the new, I believe they're going to be called amulets? No, those are the ones, Savior. When the new Savior implants come out, and hopefully, CCP please, summer 2019, the new pirate implant set called the Savior from the Angel Cartel, which reduces the cycle time of remote repair modules. So that would increase the rep per second and increase the spool up for how quickly you get, or rather decrease, the amount of time it takes you to get to your max rep per second. Do you think it'd be worthwhile using that over, say, slaves or snakes?
I think that could certainly bring the ships in, because as it currently stands, you need to go for about 10 cycles of the, well, 8 cycles, I think, to match rep output with a Guardian. So effectively, you need to be repping the same target for about 40 seconds. Now, armor links off, say, a Damnation will bring that down quite nicely, but implants to take it down further certainly help. Basically, allow your kind of logistics to hit max or at least equal parity with their normal T2 counterparts. So I see them having a use, yes.
That is quite a long delay.
It doesn't start out much lower than a Guardian, though. Like, it doesn't, at default, it isn't like a single Guardian rep. I think it's like 2 to 3 Guardian reps by default, and then it spools up to match a 4 to 5 rep Guardian, and then it goes further. And it's worth mentioning that the entire time you're doing this, you're faster than a Guardian, but you have the same resist profile, but better EHP.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, the rep at zero, you're doing 170 hit points per second, and a good Guardian that we used to run does nearly 300. So at your base, you are around about 60% of a Guardian. After 40 seconds, you are 100% of a Guardian, and after about 67 seconds, you're about 130 to 440% of a Guardian.
And you have 4 mid-slots instead of 2.
Yeah, that 4 mid-slot thing is nice. I mean, it does get a bonus to remote cap transfer, but with the 4 mid-slots, you don't even really need that. And it can fit its own smart bombs, which is... that's pretty good.
For clearing off all those freaking ECM drones, which, by the way, yeah. CCP Rise, as an Easter surprise, said that ECM drones are getting their cycle time, their jam cycle, reduced from 20 seconds down to 5. So, I mean, it's not going to be much of an impact if people are using ECM drones to get away. Like, if you're in a solo PvP fight and the dude's losing and he pops ECM drones on you to run away, that's not going to change, right? All he needs to do is break your lock. But as far as, like, logistics pilots who are dealing with mass ECM drone swarms in fleet fights, it's going to be significantly better. Like, that is a 75% reduction in their...
I like this change. I really wish they dropped the cycle time along with it.
What do you mean by the cycle time?
The cycle time is still going to be 20 seconds.
Ooh.
So every 20 seconds, it'll jam potentially for 4 seconds. That's pretty shit. If they cut it to 10 seconds, I would have thought it'd be a lot better.
I did not pick up on that detail. That is a massive nerf.
Yeah, it's an incredibly huge nerf. So, I mean, ECM drones have been king for a while. I think it's going to be good for the meta to get that switched up. I'm just saying, like, it's a pretty big bat.
I mean, we saw what they did to the Rook and the Griffin Navy issue, so I don't think they're too afraid to hit ECM too hard.
Yeah. Let's move into some shout-outs. I'm going to give a shout-out to my coworker Dennis from Poland. Part of the Twitch team. And apparently he plays Eve as well. And he was visiting the office and it came up in conversation. Somebody else asked me what I stream. It's like, oh, Eve Online. He just turns to me like, hey, like sticks out his hand. So he plays. And we never knew it before. I've been working with him for a while now. So I just want to give a shout-out to him if he's listening. Really cool. I hope we get to fly with him in-game at some point. Lave?
My shout goes out to the members of the Wrecking Crew. This is a kind of a group that operates around about the Derek area. And shout out, I've been doing some flying with them recently. Good guys. Got me into a nice little Titan kill recently. Thanks, boys. And Jenny, good little crew. Shout out.
You know, Lave, Capitalist Army is in Wrecking Crew. So if you're looking to fly with them more regularly, just saying.
Everyone's trying to recruit me. You'll never take my Hakata alive.
Artemis?
My shout-out goes to PIBC, or whatever your new mango-flavored alliance name is. Welcome to TQ. Enjoy your stay.
And that's it, guys. Head to declarationsofwar.com for our poll. And thank you for joining us. Capitalist Army is recruiting, as always. We'll get a more robust plug in the next episode. But other than that, we'll see you in about 2 weeks, guys. So wherever you are, good hunting, listeners.